Hello and welcome to Out of the Frame, conversations about photography. I'm Pia Johnson, your host, and this podcast features conversations about photography, creativity, and the world we live in. I'll be talking to other photographers, curators, academics, and researchers about their work, artistic process, and how they feel about contemporary photography today. Out of the Frame acknowledges the people of the Woiwurrung and Boonwurrung language groups of the Eastern Kulin Nation, on whose unceded lands we record each episode from. We respectfully acknowledge ancestors and elders, past and present. It was, and always will be, Aboriginal land. My guest today is Katrin Koenig, who is an artist from Bochum, Germany. Probing the currencies of the document, her work shifts across still and moving images, painting and text, at times including found materials. In extended image dialogues, her practice centres themes of connection and relation, positing imaginaries with a greater-than-human world. Many of her long-form series render non-human, human entanglement and intimate kin. Koenig has been recipient of multiple awards, such as the Bowness Photography Prize. Her work is regularly exhibited in Australian and international solo and group exhibitions, including presentations at National Portrait Gallery, Ishara Out Foundation Dubai, Chobi Mela, Paris Photo, Hamburg, Triennial of Photography, National Gallery of Victoria, Museum of Australian Photography, and Australian Centre for Photography, among others. Katrin lives and works in Naam, Melbourne, Australia, on unceded Wurundjeri country. Hi, Katrin.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining me today for Out of the Frame podcast. I thought, as I usually do, we'll start about talking how you got into photography and why it's kind of become part of your life. Because I feel like in the small amounts of time I've got to know you, you live and breathe photography. And I think that's an incredible thing to celebrate and showcase today on the podcast.
Oh, thanks, Pia. It's an honour to be here and thanks for having me. The way that photography crashed into my life, you know, properly with analogue and all the shebang, is, I guess, both with great violence and tenderness in 1998, when just after we finished high school, my oldest friend Tobias died in a plane crash above Iceland, and he wanted to be a pilot, but his great passion, his other passion, was photography. And we'd grown up together, and his mother is my godmother. And anyway, so I inherited his old Minolta with like 1,000 weird filters and took myself to Iceland for 3 months in the middle of winter and worked in these remote greenhouses and took the Minolta with me. And that was really my first sort of attempt at analog, like at like a DSLR, you know, like analog, a film camera and photography. And I had no idea what I was doing. So all the film came out blank once I developed it back home, when I got back home to Germany. But anyhow, the sort of the way it kind of entered my life, I guess, was through Tobias leaving life. And it kind of offered me solace, I guess. Mm. And it was a sort of the thing that made me feel a little bit closer to him still, I think. Yeah. And there's something in that, that, you know, with many years of practice and thinking about what one does and everything, that, you know, you'd sort of come to understand things about perhaps some of the origins of how photography entered your life much more clearly through time somehow. And also, you know, always sort of finding that a lot of the ways in which I do things are ultimately I still see how they're connected to how that came about. Yeah.
I like that idea that it sort of, as you say, crashed, but also became very much an embodied process, you know, that I assume there's, as you say, aspects of it still, you know, very much alive in you and the way you take 100%. Photos now. But also to another story where, you know, we constantly hear people go, oh, I've always wanted to be a photographer, or, you know, I picked it up, you know, my grandfather gave me something. I think it's coming to photography in, as an adult, or even though, you know, a late teenager, you know, straight after school, is a different way of thinking about the world. And it, I wondered, did you feel like when you decided, hey, actually, I'm going to keep doing this, if that was very much a kind of then formative way of thinking about how you wanted to move through the world?
No, I don't think it was ever quite like that. It was maybe more intuitive. I mean, I think, you know, through the way in which it entered my life, I guess from the beginning it felt like it was something that didn't leave me a choice. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah.
But it was sort of like, and that sounds ridiculous.
No,
but
no, I know. Like there's this draw that I have to do this, right?
Well, yeah, it just, I still feel this way so much, is that it owns me. You know, I don't own it. It owns me. And it's like, it's almost like you don't have a kind of a choice. Like you just have to do this thing.
Okay. You know? Do you, when you say it owns you, do you mean the process or the images or all of it? Or what do you mean by that?
No, I don't mean the images, because the images to me are just actually a side product.
Okay.
You know, I mean, the images, you know, supposedly that's what it's all about. But it's,
well, no, it's that classic,
actually about what it does with me in the world and what it does with
so
my body.
Embodied.
It is embodied, actually, and how it sort of is my way of, or one of my ways that, in which I relate. It's very relational. And so it's always a kind of drawing closer to, you know, so that might be, you know, the flora and fauna, you know, on the street that I have lived on for like 17 years, or it might be my immediate communities, or it might be my friends, or it might be my mom, or it might be, you know, like a community that I've connected with.
The vehicle, so it's like, right?
It's so it's really about the crux of it for me is in the, in what it is while I'm in it. It's not the, you know, the thing on the shelf or the thing on the wall or the, you know.
That explains a lot to me about you, I think. And I've had the privilege of, you know, sharing some classroom time with you and some critiques. And that makes sense, because for me, one of the incredible things that you draw out from students is how the work sits collectively in what they're trying to communicate, rather than, the paper, the stock they've used, or, you know, whatever filter or whatever. Like that. I don't think you don't think that that's not important. It's more that the thing that you resonate with and the feel that you can connect with the students and draw out is this idea of how is the making of these images speaking to what they're trying to say.
Yeah. And who are they? Why, you know, like,
why
what
is
it
important
for them?
Right?
Yeah. What, you know,
And I think that's actually really hard to articulate sometimes, because we are visual people, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I talk a lot, but I find talking about my own work incredibly hard, because sometimes I'm not actually in tune yet with what I'm trying to say until much later. You know, so you make the work because it's responsive and you're drawn to something, but it's the doing and the being in the work. And then, as you say, then you hope that the images come together and resonate in a way that communicate what you're trying to say. But I also think what's fascinating when you say it's that thing about connecting to other things, is that I guess I wonder, and this is probably not a photography question and more a human question, is by having by having the camera or whatever version of it, right? Is it a way for you to be able to kind of like not have an excuse, but have this mechanism to go, actually, hey, I want to put myself, or I want to make my street or my community or that, you know, tree that keeps changing and, you know, every day more part of like the world's vocab?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's 100%, and it goes back to this kind of the drawing closer, I guess, you know. Yeah.
I like that. Can you talk more about how maybe then the subjects that you've decided to photograph sit within that sort of drawing closer framework, or that idea, I should say, rather than framework?
Do you mean people?
Anything.
Oh, okay. So you mean the stories?
Yeah, because I feel like your work is about story.
Mm, yeah.
And universal stories, even though they're incredibly intimate and I think very particular, but that is that, I mean, I'll use the stereotype, the personal is universal. You know, the closer and more detail you get to something, the more everyone can actually enter the image.
Oh, thank you, Pia. Well, yeah, I think it's, I mean, it's also, you know, like I just don't even know, like I would also say I'd hope that that's what my work does. But you know, one
does.
Can,
I
one
think
cannot
it does.
Be sure, you know, like one can just try yeah. and like, you know,
yeah.
one can hope that like, you know, but yeah, I guess it's like, it's the idea that the process itself is my way of sort of drawing closer. So whether that's, you know, the Tangerang country, like mountain so-called, you know, or whether that's a community out on Mari Mari country, you know, or, I think just, you know, because nothing sits in isolation ever, right? And so this sort of thinking around and using practice as a way to sort of think around how things are in relation to each other and how everything is kind of in entanglement and in kinship, essentially, and how we can live alongside each other, with each other, rather than apart. Yeah.
You were obviously born in Germany and now live in Australia, also called Australia. Do you think that experience of migrating to a different country has also affected the way you use the camera and the projects that you tackle?
It's so interesting because I get asked this question a lot, you know, and it makes sense. And it's really interesting because I always feel like I don't know that I have an answer to it, because it's a question I have myself. I find it interesting to think about, and I would think the obvious answer would be, sure, of course, you know, it would have to, because
it has to be, yeah.
Well, everything shapes you.
But right? It might not
anything
be conscious,
and everything
though.
That happens to you shapes
yeah, yeah.
you, of course. But I don't know, at the core of it all, I'm just also me. And then would I have been, you know, had I stayed back, you know, the work might, you know, I would have had different experiences, I guess, partially, and or, you know, to a large extent, probably.
Probably, yeah.
So, you know, I may have, so that, you know, essentially the, some of the content might have been different.
Mm.
But, you know, is what is at the core of me, you know, may have still to a degree also been
yeah.
the same. And so then maybe certain sensibilities or something, for yeah. example, might have
yeah.
also been there. It's a really interesting.
But I think it's okay to say it may have, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, like yeah, I think we're very much, I mean, obviously I have a lot of work in that kind of cultural identity space and love the liminal and love this kind of weird feeling of belonging in countries that I haven't spent that much time because it's culturally in me or something or in my heritage.
Mm.
But I also think I make images because that's how I make images, right?
Or yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's how we are because of, as you say, the things that have just been ourselves.
Yeah.
But I do, yeah, I'm kind of curious because, as you say, maybe the content would be different. Mm. And the experiences would be indifferent, but the sensibility may is just core Katrin.
Yeah, that's what I want. But I don't know, right? Like,
yeah,
I don't have any answers to that. So, but I'm just, you know, it's an interesting, you know, kind of proposition. It's an interesting space to think about.
Yeah.
But then, of course, it has shaped me. And,
yeah.
and I also, I'm very aware that I definitely think I needed to leave.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, in order to
grow maybe or
make,
shift, yeah.
You know, to make, yeah, like I think, yeah, in many ways.
That's a really lovely thing to ponder on, actually. Mm. Yeah. I've lived in Australia my whole life and I always wondered, I wonder what it would have been like if I had left.
Yeah.
Even just for a small amount of time.
Yeah.
You know, to be, have the opportunity to remake.
Yeah. But it's just interesting. I mean, it's all like sliding doors too,
totally.
Right? Like, yeah.
Yeah. So I first encountered your work at Edmund Pierce, used to be a gallery in the Nicholas Building a little while ago. And the work was a beautiful series of work called Dear Chris. And for me, without knowing you then and much of your work, I found it really poignant project about loss.
Thank you.
But I think it also, part of the reason why I was really drawn to the work was of the cross-medium nature of it. Mm. So you drew in archival material like family photographs or vernacular photography, landscape work, some object kind of sort of studio style, or, you know, like that kind of key close object photography, and then portraits as well. Would you be able to talk a little bit about that work and also the kind of lines? Like, I'm interested in how work kind of feeds like the next project.
It's a work about Chris, who was my cousin's husband and who had suffered from clinical depression, very horrible, severe depression for a really long time, and had survived for a long time and then was no longer able to survive and died from suicide. And so that's what the work is essentially about. And, you know, kind of from when it happened to, I mean, right from the beginning, I kind of knew that I needed to speak to this. It was really important to me to sort of, for him to not exist as a number or as a statistic, but, you know, and for that, and also thinking about like, as artists, you know, when we have the toolkit of communication, like I always feel an urge to talk to the difficult stories that might emerge as well. And particularly also when there are, of course, you know, places of taboo, for example, in terms of, you know, we still don't really, I mean, we think we've evolved or something, but actually, you know.
Yeah.
And so that sort of sharing of difficult things, I think, is something important to me. And so from the beginning, I sort of was really aware, though, that, you know, the work needed to exist in a way that was not suffocating, and if that's even possible. But the idea was, well, it's such a difficult situation that, you know, if the work needs to offer also a space of respite or lightness, or there needs to be people, I want people to be able to breathe in the work. And so that was really important. And I immediately also knew, okay, like I want to do these three different things, the archival pictures that I bring in from Chris's family album, and then, you know, the objects that he had left, but I should say that Alana kept of his, that really were, through his passing or leaving, no longer really objects at all. They sort of became something other than
like talismans,
objects,
or
really,
yeah,
you know. And then the sites of significance to him, which were all very reclusive places, of course, that he was seeking, which
for
was
solace,
part of his,
right.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
For escape as well, you know. Mm. Yeah, so that's what the pictures sort of entail, essentially. And
I didn't find the series suffocating or
no,
any
exactly.
Of it. I think
thank
it's
you.
Actually, that's, I think that's why it's sort of poignant. But they're quite poetic.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that was. I was hoping that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah,
you know, I was really
like
conscious of not being not making dark, like,
yeah,
you know, heavy.
No, they're not bleak either. They're actually, but they're not celebratory. They're just quiet.
Yeah.
And I think for me, they are a bit like a poem. Like, they're like
thank
different
you.
Images, if you imagine them as different stanzas in a poem, you know, they're kind of little, I don't know, vignettes or something. But again, I go back to the thing I said earlier, like, they're so deeply personal, but we all understand what those images are speaking to.
Thank you. Yeah, and I wanted to say that, you know, he existed and that his story matters.
Yeah.
And so therefore, but, you know, in a greater sense also, these stories matter and these people existed.
Yeah.
And they still do, actually.
Yeah, and our connections to them matter, 100%. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So, and, you know, I kind of made that work in very close collaboration with Alana, who, you know.
Of course.
And there's this beautiful essay by Margaret Gibson and where she talks about the melancholy object and the sort of the object that once, you know, its owner has left, died, essentially kind of enter a different state of being.
Oh, I guess. Interesting.
Yeah,
I must have a look at that essay.
Do seek it out. Yeah.
Because I did a lot of work on my grandmother's house.
Mm-hmm.
And once she was actually still alive when I looked at the house initially, but then I returned many times then. It was really different when she had died.
Mm.
That what happens to, I was mainly looking at the space, but I think the objects are a really interesting idea as well.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, because they lose their functionality in a sense. So it's like it enters a different space of, you know, it's disentangled suddenly from being functional, you know, or an object of use, essentially. Use in the sense of like the daily,
yes,
you know.
Yes.
Yeah, and it just sort of becomes something else, I guess.
So how has, if I go to that second part of my question,
yes,
how do you think that work has then resonated through the next bodies of work?
Mm.
Or not?
I think yes. I mean, I always feel like, you know, everything's kind of an evolvement, you know, I would say that for anyone who has a creative practice, really, is that it can't, because I just feel like it can't be otherwise, actually. You know, it's sort of innate that there's like,
totally.
Well, again, is the same thing. Actually, nothing sits in isolation, right? And so thematically, I mean, well, that's very specific, but thematically, obviously, the relational and the sort of, yes, the personal, but also the, you know, like grief when it presents itself. So when it enters my life, I always feel an urgency to talk to it. But it's not, my practice is not about, I don't have a grief practice.
No.
It's not like that. But
it's kind of brave of you to go there though, right?
Oh, thank you.
I'm not sure I could do it.
Well, maybe I'm just completely bonkers.
You know? Maybe. I can't say that.
Which I am anyway, so.
Yes. Like all of us, I always say that. We're all crazy.
Yeah. But, you know, and so the way that I work is, and that's probably also, you know, that's definitely quite mad probably too, but I always usually work in like, quite a lot of different stories at any one given point in time, like eight or ten different works, and then they just go on for years and years and years and years.
Yes, because you work quite long form.
Yeah,
right?
And so, you know, they inherently, of course, they have sort of, it couldn't not be, but like they sort of merge in and out of each other, and they intersect, and they, you know, they meander in and out, and so everything kind of informs everything.
Yeah.
Everything is touched by everything else, you know?
Oh, that's lovely. I like that vision.
You.
Yeah. Because I think that is really, like, that idea of touch also, that's also how we live in the world, right?
Mm.
Like, we're constantly thinking through, like, you know, multiple Venn diagrams all laid on top of each other, you know?
Yeah. And I think because of this kind of mad way of working, this is also why I always feel so incredibly stranded and this idea of the word project. I just don't feel at home in that at all.
Yeah,
and I always think like, oh, I wish there was a different freaking language around that.
Yeah.
You know, 'cause it just doesn't, project to me is useful when, you know, you have like a commercial, like, you know, there's a sort of,
you have a commission
and it's a very tight, it's a particular time frame, it's a particular thing, and then you do it and then you park it on the shelf. It's like a project. For me, the project is like, okay, you do it, it has a life, and then you put it on the shelf and you're done and you move on to the next thing. But nothing ever works that way for me with my practice. Like everything is forever in fluidity somehow and interconnected to everything else. And so, you know, while that's mad, it's also like just the way I work. So I can't help it, you know. And I always wish I had a different word for project.
Oh, that's a good project. We should try and find a word. I think that's really quite a lovely way of kind of dissenting in a way, you know, like going, how actually do we work, rather than us trying to find the words that we have to. And I think structurally in the society we live in, we're constantly going, oh, we have to fit in that box, right? Or find that funding or whatever. But actually by going, no, I don't do this.
100%. And this is also, I'm so passionate, something that I feel so passionately about with students as well, to really kind of encourage them to just, it's like, listen to your own body and listen to how you, I mean, of course, and, you know, sure, like challenge yourself and grow you know.
But be kind of like true to yourself.
Yeah, but also like, you know, because everybody, it works differently for everybody, right? And so you have a way of working that works for you. Someone else has a way of working that works for them. I have my way of making things. And so there's no right or wrong. It's like, just it just works differently in different ways. And I think to just really encourage people to see that, to kind of identify what works for them and what the ways are in which they need to work. And because I feel like they're, in a way, the body already knows, you know.
I kind of want to add to that, that it also can change.
Like it can change. It changes
totally
all the time.
Give ourselves permission to change.
100%.
Too, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 And actually that's really important too, you know, because it's, you know, it's like one, you know, it's not about stagnation. It's like, you know,
but I think that's hard when you've had success or, you know, validation from external, or you think, oh, this is what I'm into and I have to keep going. But having, I think, you know, getting a bit older, I've now given my permission to like play and experiment and go, oh, how does that feel in my body? Or
totally.
Yeah. 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 I want to talk to you about your new book published by Choose Commune titled Between the Skin and Sea. And I feel like I have to have the gap because on your book spine, there is this gap. And I'm really obsessed with that gap. I'm not sure why. I love text. But I also feel like when you enable a gap, you ask people to move into it. Like you invite people. And I feel that's what your book does. Your book really does invite us to think about, and again, one of these long form works that.
Not that long, actually.
Well,
for me,
it's for 3 years, right?
3 years for me is that like short? Ridiculously tiny. Okay. Like,
but lots of images. I remember you saying that you had to really come down, and you speak about the work as being tales of, and I quote, entanglement, relation, connection, and intimacy unfold, leaning into the shadows. The photographs trace networks of love, grief, kinship, shelter, and repair. Not small things. Could you talk a little bit about how the work came together and why these images made what has become your new book?
Well, the work was made, spanned 3 years, is that right? 4 years, actually.
4 years, if you include all of 20,
yeah, that's right. Yes. So 2020 to 23.
Yeah. After
to count, yeah. I can only ever count in my mother tongue. I don't know why.
I love
it's
that.
Ridiculous.
No, it's great.
I always make a fool of myself. But.
No, can I just pause on that moment for I hope to make you feel more comfortable. I actually think this is more the way we need to change the world. Let us speak in our mother tongue and then translate later.
Oh,
or
okay.
Think in our mother tongue
I love it.
And then translate later. Yeah.
So that's when the work was made. And, I mean, as we all know, I don't even have to relay it, what the world was at that through those years, and particularly here in the so-called Australia also, where we had, of course, in Nam, the, like, longest insane lockdown in the world, you know, 2 years and so forth. And, of course, it was, you know, sort of emerged out of the tail end of the fires, which is also something that flows through the book as well. It makes various appearances. So this kind of, you know, the ecological emergency, which is also a really large part of my practice too, is in the book also, but in as ever in subtlety, I guess. So, you know, I think I mean, I always think about how can I, as an artist, as someone who works with language, essentially, because that's what we're doing, how can I speak critically to the times in which I live, even with all the subtlety that I, you know, or the quietude that I like to sort of work with, I guess, or have in my images. But and so, you know, it was that same sense that I felt an urgency to kind of speak to the time in which I exist. Of course, a kind of compulsion to you know, through this time to sort of make, to not lose my sanity too, really. And essentially the themes that are hopefully in the book, that hopefully can be felt in the book, are, of course, inherently related to the time from which they emerged. So, you know, kinship with very few, very close people. So, I mean, my family appears a couple of times, but hardly actually. But Keke appears a lot. He's one of the main sort of people in the book, and then just a very small number of really close, dear friends. Some of my best friends, who you know, whose kids also grow through the book. So, you know, like in the beginning, Noah is a baby, and then, you know, like a bunch of years later, Noah's not a baby. Oh, surprise, surprise.
All that thing, time.
Yeah. Wow. Isn't nature amazing?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, like, so that's all in there. And so kinship and repair and shelter and I mean, love is a, you know, a red thread in the book.
That's very Asian of you.
Is it?
Yeah, there's this beautiful very lots of different takes on the idea of the red thread connects every one of us to our love.
That's true, actually. Yeah. And, you know, also I think I'd say in probably all my work, actually. Yeah. So the book's no different, I guess. Yeah.
But there's an aspect of some of those, I feel like those innocent things. It's that picture of, is it a blackbird or a minor or someone?
Oh,
and
it's a minor.
It's a minor, isn't
it?
Yeah,
I love minors.
Yeah, which is so funny because I have you know, they're terrible for our native.
They are. They're invasive.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're horrible.
And it's interesting because I live regionally too, and it's like there's a group of minor birds that are like a couple of streets from where I live, and they're always there around people's bins. And but I always get scared when they like creep a bit further closer to my area because I have all these amazing native birds in my backyard. And I'm like, oh, these minor birds. But they have, well, the way that you photograph this one particular one is kind of, yeah, it feels innocent and kind of just a portrait of a bird, and then you sit with it, and maybe it's the black and white nature of the world, or maybe Hitchcock's birds.
Maybe it's just the eye.
Maybe it's the eye.
Because the eye is.
The eye is like, yeah, there's the eye something is else actually, going on there.
Yeah, the eye is, and I'm not even, like, whenever I look at this picture,
It's quite peculiar.
I'm amazed myself, not at the picture, just at this bird looking, you know,
yes.
And the eye, and it's so... it's quite intense.
Yeah, and so inquisitive and so, like, I don't want to go down to the, like, slightly dark aspect, but there is this ominousness or consciousness, maybe, actually. Maybe
that's what I feel from it, too. That's what I feel from it. And I really feel like we're looking at each other and just...
And, like,
seeing.
Yes. But I feel like that, you know, across, like, a number of the different images, and they're usually of... non-human or, yeah, like Noah. And there is something quite interesting about, maybe it's for me a perspective thing, like a life reflection thing. Maybe I would feel differently if I was younger. But it feels like there's that fragility of life, but also kind of going, oh, hold on, but this is what we are meant to be, like holding close, and it may not be forever. And
well, it isn't.
Well, that's right. But it's that, but like right now in the moment, like you're very conscious of that. Maybe that's the word I'm looking for rather than ominous. It's like we're going to lose these things.
Yes. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And not like not, as you said, even that thing of like baby to like not a baby, but like you lose those things as you grow up. You lose things as we move through the world, and definitely in this climate emergency, we're losing things very rapidly in a way that we're witnessing it in a crazy, scary way. So it's not just things and people, but it's time and thoughts and everything.
It's everything.
Right? Yeah. So maybe that's what I feel sits maybe in that gap between skin
Thank you.
And sea.
Yeah, I love that. That's beautiful. Thank you.
Well, that's just my interpretation.
No, I love it. Yeah. Yeah. And I love the notion that the gap invites you in or it sucks you in, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, it's like, yeah, that's something that's throughout everything I make is the natural, the kind of greater than human world.
Yeah.
You know, and I sort of always thinking about a kinship with it, you know.
Yeah, and I feel that in your, like, mountain work and the forest work too.
Yeah. And I've made many others that are not on my, I mean, my website barely has anything on it really.
That's okay. Yeah, so I think there's, but also can I talk about just really briefly the choice of the medium that you pick? You know, is it black and white or colour or analog or not? Or like how do you decide?
I think quite often it's a number of different things actually, but quite often it's related, or actually always at the core is kind of like, what is the story? And this might sound a bit abstract, but it's like, I want to listen to the story because I believe it already exists outside of me. And of course it does. It's the world, right? Mm. And so what does it want from me? What do I need to do in order to even just try and do it any justice at all? Rather than sort of plonking my formula onto something going, okay, who are you? What do you want? What do you need? How can I talk to you? And so, you know, like for example, the work that I made with my dad and my brother in collaboration when dad in 2020 lost his wife of 23 years, it's made with Polaroid. And so the situation dictated the medium. It couldn't be anything other than Polaroid because it's really essentially the only truly open process in photography, direct, instant, open process.
Yeah.
And so because of the place in which we were and the sort of the need for it to be collaborative, and not only collaborative, but actually, and so Dad had a huge part in like sort of, you know, essentially making the pictures, because he would ask for certain things that, you know, he would say the hallway, I want that bit of the hallway to be the hugging corner, and I want all these hugging portraits. And so, you know, and so for that we had this, so it became a kind of, the Polaroiding became an essential part of moving through with each other, moving through this grief, or moving in, not even through, just moving in this grief actually. And so that's sort of always at the core, is kind of like, what is the story? What does it want from me? How can I do it justice? You know, and then other things like, you know, for example, film far out. I mean, who can afford color film?
I know.
Truly. yeah. I mean, if you can, that's really amazing.
Yeah.
But I kind of can't very often. And it's, so the black and white is also really, truly just very practically a way in which I can still work with film, because I can develop it myself. And, you know, the film is obviously half the price of a color roll. And so, you know, but yeah, it's always kind of informed by what the story is.
So what's the next story? I mean, I know you said you've got lots of works going on at the same time, so I have to correct myself there. Musings? I don't know. That feels too light. Anyway, we'll find a word, Catherine. That's going to be That's going to be my project.
Yeah.
Because there will be an endpoint. I know we've got you here at RMIT doing quite a bit of teaching, which is fabulous, in the master's program.
So happy to be here.
I'm glad. We're very fortunate to have you. I guess then maybe what is the next thing? Because I I feel like these projects take a lot of time, energy and emotion. But is there something on the horizon or, yeah, what's kind of next?
At the moment I'm working on a solo show that I've got coming up at Manningham Art Gallery.
Oh, beautiful space.
Yeah, in August, and so that's gorgeous.
Fabulous.
But also, you know, my main I did have a year of, which has never happened to me in the past ever since I've made things. But so I had a gap year last year.
Great. You got to lean in.
Well, actually, it wasn't a gap. I feel like it was my year of hardest labor, but it had nothing to do with photography.
But I think that sometimes is needed.
Yeah, so I couldn't really, you know, I wasn't really making.
Yeah, but you produced a book.
But I was working very hard, yeah. I did make a book, that's true, yeah. I made a book.
That's a small thing.
That's true. Sometimes I forget. But no, so the main thing that I'm working on and have been working on since the end of 2020 is out with has become my other home, a community out and on Tari Tari, Mari Mari country called Robin Vale.
I know Robin Vale.
Yeah, and, you know, 6 hours out of Nam. And just on the border to New, it's a border town,
yeah.
And you know, an hour from Mildura, in the south bend of the Great Maori River, and so that's I'm there like I'm there all the time. I'm just off again next weekend,
fantastic,
because a friend invited me to do a thing for her, and so it's very present. I just got back from there the other week, so that's kind of my main, you know.
That's where your head is at the moment.
Yeah, that's where my head and my heart are.
Oh, that's
really
lovely. Yeah, great. Oh, well, I'm excited to see where that work goes and for your show in August.
Thank you. Me too.
Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thanks, Pia. That was beautiful. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Out of the Frame is supported by RMIT University Press Play Studio, is produced by Pia Johnson, music by Steph O'Hara, and graphic design by Brent Leadovitz.